From NPR News, this is live special coverage of the first of three presidential debates between President Barack Obama and Governor Mitt Romney. For the next half hour, we're going to discuss tonight's debate with our team of reporters and analysts here in Washington and in Denver. We're going to look at both men's performances. We'll also hear from our team of fact-checkers who've been listening very closely tonight. Let's go ahead and start in Denver. We have NPR's Ari Shapiro, who's been covering the Romney campaign, and also NPR's Scott Horsley, who's been covering the Obama campaign. Ari, let me start with you. Did Mitt Romney accomplish tonight what he set out to do?
Well, the first thing that he had to do was stand on the stage facing the President of the United States and look plausible as a potential president. He certainly cleared that bar, and then I think went a little farther beyond that bar besides. He held his own. He was assertive, some might say aggressive. He pushed back at times on the moderator. He also had some memorable lines, whether you call them zingers or not. They're lines that are going to be quoted in the days to come, talking about trickle-down government, talking about his five boys, talking about declining income as a tax in and of itself. He said, I call it the economy tax. So on that level, he performed very well.
Did you hear anything, Ari, tonight that you hadn't heard on the campaign trail?
All of the back and forth between the president and Mitt Romney were new. They've been talking past each other for months and months and months now. This was the first time you really heard the push and pull on very specific issues. So specific that I wondered if at times the debate became a little wonky, referring to Simpson, Bowles, Dodd-Frank. I asked on Twitter what people made of it. One person said it's really a blur. A lot of persons said lots of rhetoric without substance. Someone else said too many numbers. So it was a very substantive debate. I'm not sure how that went over with the American people.
Scott, let me turn to you. Did the president accomplish what he set out to do tonight?
Well, I often think people like Ari and me are the worst position to evaluate this because, of course, we've been marinating in this rhetoric for months and months. So I was trying to put myself in the position of someone who really was sort of just now tuning into the presidential contest and how these folks would come across. And I think, as Ari says, I think if you were just getting introduced to Governor Romney, who's obviously the fresher face on that stage, he came across as a plausible candidate. And what I think the president tried to do many times was sort of hold Romney's feet to the fire and make him take ownership for the things he's been campaigning on for the last 18 months. He said at one point when Romney was sort of hedging on what the impact of his tax cuts would be, he said, look, he's been running as a Republican candidate on these tax cuts as his big idea. And now when the consequences are upon him in terms of what it might mean for the deficit or shifting cost on the middle class, he says, well, never mind. If those were the consequences, then we just wouldn't follow through with it.
Scott, in that room there in Denver, were you able to get a sense of the dynamic between these two men?
I think Governor Romney, as Ari said, was tough enough. He certainly didn't come across as intimidated by being on the same stage with the President of the United States, but he also seemed respectful. And I thought, for the most part, President Obama was equally respectful of Governor Romney. There was a little bit of a snub at the very end there when he talked about the busy day Romney would have on his first day in office when he's also pledged to repeal Obamacare. And that came across as, perhaps a little bit contemptuous. And certainly there have been press accounts that he is somewhat contemptuous of Mitt Romney, but I think for the most part they were respectful but tough towards one another.
Scott Horsley, NPR's Ari Shapiro covering the story for us in Denver. Gentlemen, thanks.
Thanks, Guy.
Let's turn now to our analysts here in Washington, also in Denver. I'm joined by NPR senior Washington editor Ron Elving. E.J. Dionne of The Washington Post and Brookings is with me here in the studio, as is Matthew Continetti of The Washington Free Beacon. And in Denver, we have NPR's national political correspondent, Mara Liasson. Let me begin with you, Mara. What were your impressions from tonight?
Well, my impressions were that stylistically, both men really kept themselves in check. There was a lot of smiling, very positive, very cordial, very respectful. There weren't a lot of zingers, I don't think. There were some well-rehearsed lines. My question throughout was, this debate was about Mitt Romney. He's the one who had to do something in this debate to change the dynamic of the race. I think he was effective, he made his points, but he also was on the defensive. He spent a lot of time saying, I don't have a $5 trillion tax cut. I'm not going to raise cut taxes on the rich. I'm not going to cut the popular parts of Obamacare. As a matter of fact, I like regulation of Wall Street. I'm going to keep some of Dodd-Frank. So I thought he spent a lot of time trying to move to the center. And the president, I think, held his own. You know, he made a defense of what he did, and he managed to kind of needle Romney a little bit, both about Obamacare and also about the fact that he hasn't laid out specifics on a number of things, that he said he wants to do things, but he won't tell you exactly how he's going to do it. That's been the rap against Romney all along, and I thought he was effective that way. I still am left with the big question mark. Did anything happen tonight that is going to change the trajectory of the race? And I'm not convinced that it did.
Ron Elving, your impressions?
I suspect Mitt Romney and his campaign team got exactly what they wanted tonight. They prepared for this debate very well. They went after their strategy. They pretty much achieved it. This was, in essence, a debate between a corporate executive and a government professor. So I'm not sure that Obama, the president, and his team got what they wanted out of that particular contrast. The government professor did not come on nearly as strong as the corporate executive, who was full of confidence, full of sales pitch, simply denying things that were allegations against him, and pressing forward, even perhaps in defiance at several points of the moderator, and coming on a lot stronger than the president. Now, does that win? Ultimately, we don't know. We'll have to see what the ultimate effect of that is. But it was clear that while I would never call Barack Obama inarticulate, he had a lot of trouble making his own case tonight.
E.J. Dionne, what was your impression? Did you think that Mitt Romney won this debate?
I don't think he won the debate. I think what he did is he quieted some of the voices of dissent in his own party because he looked stronger. He was ferocious on the attack, and he was sort of going up against Obama again and again. It reminded me a little of his persona when he went after Newt Gingrich right before the Florida primary, when Gingrich was surging. But I think he also left himself some problems. I think the strangest aspect of this debate was Romney's decision essentially to change his tax plan on the fly. I mean, he does have a $5 trillion tax cut plan. I checked through the computer and looked at lots of stories that said Romney's $5 trillion tax cut plan.
And we will be fact-checking that tonight.
Yes, and then he said, but I don't have a tax cut of the scale you're talking about. So what I wonder is, you know, and then he is now for his Massachusetts health care plan, which he didn't want to talk about at all in the primaries. So I think this pivot is going to provide some fodder for the Obama folks. But the president, I think, might have chosen to take a big punch at Romney and really try to put him on his heels. I don't think he did that tonight. I think he was more interested in explaining things. He made Romney defensive on a few points, and I think he scored a few points on the vagueness of Romney's plan. But he didn't choose to engage him as forcefully as Romney sought to engage Obama.
Matthew Cottinetti, what was your takeaway from it?
Well, I've spent the last few weeks reading all these stories about how the election was over, about how Obama has it in the bag, how the Romney campaign is in a state of collapse. And what that said to me was Romney had to win this debate, and I think he did win it. I think he was addressing two audiences here. The first, and actually the more important in terms of perception, was the media, who had been writing all those stories about how, yeah, it's basically done. You know, New York Times columnist Paul Krugman is already writing that Obama has betrayed his mandate for re-election. Well, he hasn't won re-election yet. And I think this is going to cause a lot of pause among the people who are writing these stories and giving these broadcasts. The second audience, the swing voters, specifically independent women, specifically, even more specifically, independent white women without college degrees. How did they respond to this? Well, we didn't have the Frank Luntz dialing system here at NPR Studios, but I would have loved to have seen it, whether they thought that Romney came across as too aggressive or just aggressive enough.
Mara Liasson, in the remaining minute and a half we have before we'll come back to this group, what was your sense about the way Romney handled the questions? Did he do what he set out to do tonight?
I think he did. I mean, I think he was aggressive and assertive, as our other panelists have said tonight, and I think he made his case. I was struck by how much he was explaining, you know, explaining that his tax plan wasn't $5 trillion. If that was the case, we certainly would have heard that before, explaining that he really didn't want to repeal all of Dodd-Frank. But on the other hand, I think he looked like a president. He was on the same stage as the president. He was aggressive and assertive. I think the bar was a lot higher for him tonight. In other words, he had to accomplish more, and I think he probably did. But whether how this gets digested over the next couple of days. Are there going to be memorable lines? Overall, I think if you watched the debate, you might have come to the conclusion that Romney was more forceful. What this does to the shape of the race, I'm just not sure.
Mara, stand by. Matthew Continetti, E.J. Dionne, and Ron Elving, stand by. We're going to come back to you in just a moment, but let's turn to some of our reporters who've been fact-checking the debate tonight. The numbers, the claims, the assertions were flying. And we've been asking some of our reporters to sort through that to find out which of those statements have and have not passed the accuracy test. The economy, of course, got the greatest amount of attention in this first debate. So let's start with NPR's economics correspondent, John Idsty, who is listening in and checking the facts for us. So welcome, John.
It's good to be here, Guy.
Let's start with what was just the first claim from the president. Here's what he said in his opening statement.
Over the last 30 months, we've seen 5 million jobs in the private sector created. The auto industry has come roaring back, and housing has begun to rise. But we all know that we've still got a lot of work to do. And so the question here tonight is not where we've been, but where we're going.
Okay, John, essentially the president's saying 5 million new jobs. Is that claim accurate?
Yeah, the president's claim is accurate, but not the whole story. He's very careful about his language, 5 million jobs in the private sector over the past 30 months. But just about the same number of jobs were lost in the first year of President Obama's administration. So the net number of jobs created during his term is now positive, but just barely. Now, you can argue about when you should start counting. President Obama points out that he inherited an economy in free fall, which he did. It's hard to hold a president responsible for job losses associated with a huge recession that didn't start on his watch. Mm. What you can argue, if you're Mitt Romney, is that job creation hasn't been fast enough and that it's slowed considerably in the past several months.
Okay, let's talk about deficits for a moment, John. Governor Romney said that President Obama had doubled the deficit on his watch. True or false?
False. The president inherited an annual budget deficit of over $1 trillion, and the deficit remains over $1 trillion. But the president has not delivered on his promise to cut the deficit in half during his first term. As I said, it will remain over $1 trillion for 2012 and is expected to be in the same range in 2013.
Okay, there was a big exchange about Governor Romney's tax plan. President Obama saying it would cost $5 trillion, would end up raising taxes for middle-income Americans by $2,000 a year and so on. Governor Romney said that is simply not the case. Who's right?
Well, it's hard to know because Governor Romney hasn't provided very many details for his plan. He says he'll cut tax rates by 20%, but not increase the deficit. He says he'll do it by closing loopholes, but he says he'll leave one of the biggest loopholes, the mortgage interest deduction, alone. The Tax Policy Center, a nonpartisan group, did a study and found that there were not enough in deductions and loopholes to pay for the plan. And if Mr. Romney wasn't going to increase deficits, taxes on the middle class would have to rise in the range of $2,000. Governor Romney takes issue with the study, but still hasn't told us in detail how his plan is going to work.
Well, thanks, John. That's NPR's John Idsty reporting on the economy and fact-checking that for us. Thanks again, John, for coming in. Let's turn now to health care. The candidates obviously had some very big differences on that, and some of the biggest were over what could happen to the Medicare program. Here's Governor Romney.
But on Medicare, for current retirees, he's cutting $716 billion from the program. Now, he says by not overpaying hospitals and providers, actually just going to them and saying, we're going to reduce the rates you get paid across the board. Everybody's going to get a lower rate. That's not just going after places where there's abuse. That's saying we're cutting the rates. Some 15% of hospitals and nursing homes say they won't take any more Medicare patients.
NPR's Julie Rodner joins us now. Julie, about, you know, the only thing that the candidates did not disagree over when it came to Medicare was that $716 billion, that would be reduced under the health law. How would it affect the program?
Well, this is obviously a major issue in the campaign, if only because senior citizens are such a key voting bloc in so many of these big swing states. And it is a little bit confusing. The bottom line is that both candidates are playing a little bit fast and loose with the facts here. President Obama said that all of the money comes from overpayments to health care providers, and he seemed to suggest that all of it goes back to seniors in the way of better benefits. And that's not quite right. Much of the money does come from overpayments, particularly to private insurance companies. Some of the other reductions come from hospitals and drug companies, and they're kind of betting that they can afford to take a little bit less in Medicare reimbursement because they'll have a lot more paying customers from the newly insured. And yes, some of the money, some of that $716 billion, does go back to seniors in terms of closing the prescription drug benefit donut hole and new preventive benefits, as the president said. But a big chunk of it also goes to fund the tax subsidies that will help the uninsured get coverage. That's why the hospitals and drug companies agreed to those reductions. On the other hand, Governor Romney is also overstating his case when he talks about things like doctors not taking patients. There is a problem with the formula under which Medicare pays doctors, but that predates the passage of the health law, and it isn't connected to it in any way. Then the fact is, both candidates have pointed out elsewhere in the debate that in order to sustain Medicare for 78 million baby boomers who are just now starting to join, more is likely going to have to be done to put Medicare on some kind of a sustainable fiscal path.
Julie, just very briefly, was there anything that you heard from Governor Romney tonight, particularly about his plan in Massachusetts, that surprised you? He seemed slightly more enthusiastic about that plan tonight than I had heard him before.
Yeah, of course, you know, during the primaries, he pretty much had to disavow it because it was, after all, the foundation, the basis for what became the federal health law. And tonight he seemed to embrace it a little more, but tried to draw some distinctions between it and the federal law. We'll see how much he keeps doing that as these last few closing weeks of the campaign come to fruition.
That's NPR's health policy correspondent Julie Rovner. Julie, thanks so much.
Sure.
And if you're just joining us, you're listening to live special coverage of the first presidential debate from NPR News. I'm Guy Raz. I'm joined now by, returning, NPR's senior Washington editor Ron Elving. We've got E.J. Dionne of The Washington Post and Brookings, Matthew Continetti of The Washington Free Beacon, and in Denver, NPR's national political correspondent Mara Liasson. Ron, let me go to you on this, but I was struck at how policy-oriented this conversation was. I mean, there were a lot of numbers and a lot of accusations and counter-accusations. It really was focused on numbers and policy, and somewhat surprising.
There was not much soaring rhetoric at the beginning of the debate, if at any point, but certainly not in the first 15, 20 minutes, which was how long it took to get through the first little segment, which was supposed to take 15 minutes. In fact, it took a good bit more than 20 minutes, because both men were armed with many statistics, multiple statistics, and the more that one used, the more the other felt he had to respond to each number with another number. And they got into a lot of shorthand, they got into a lot of policy wonkism, and while that is the substance and the specifics that Jim Lehrer, the moderator, kept demanding and saying, this is what we want tonight, it was also, I suspect, off-putting to a goodly portion of the audience that can't really follow all of that, shouldn't be expected to follow all of that, should be given something else, either in the way of signposting or in the way of explanation by these candidates, so that they can really get some traction with it.
Mara, that format tonight, somewhat unusual. At times, I think some of us here were wondering whether Jim Lehrer had lost control over the debate. What was your sense there?
Well, I think that was by design. I think that, you know, we all say we want the candidates to have substantive, free-flowing, not super-structured exchanges, and they did. And Jim Lehrer got out of the way. I don't think that was bad. I do think there's a question about what voters will get out of this. You know, there are a couple pieces of conventional wisdom about debates. One is that the first debate always favors the challenger, if only because he gets to stand on the same stage as the president. It levels the playing field. And I think this debate certainly did end up favoring Romney a little. I'm not sure how much. The other piece of conventional wisdom is the first half hour is really crucial. And I think Romney did something very effective right out of the gate. He knew he had to humanize himself, push back against that 47% stereotype, which he created, that he's an out-of-touch plutocrat. And he told stories about people who came up to him on the campaign trail, grabbed his arm and said, help me. I'm out of work, or my husband's out of work, or I'm losing my house. So I thought that was very effective. However, when the first half hour progressed, I thought it really did get into a lot of technical discussion of taxes, a lot of numbers, and I don't know if he made the kind of impression that would have stopped people from going to the fridge and sticking with the whole debate.
E.J. Dionne, were you surprised at how few punches President Obama threw tonight?
Yes, I was surprised. And I think I was looking at Twitter as we were talking, and there is a lot of upsetment among liberals tonight who felt that Obama should have been more aggressive. Correct me if I'm wrong, but the number 47% did not
never
come up at all,
yeah,
which in itself is a kind of victory for Romney. And so the media conventional wisdom seems to be calling it for Romney. I think the question is, will his attacks play with the kind of swing voters he wants to win? Because I think some of Obama's longer, somewhat occasionally halting answers that were trying to explain, here's what I'm trying to do, specifics about programs, this helps you, Romney's plan hurts you, some of that ends up playing much better with voters than it does with pundits. And that's what we're going to find out. And we'll also find out how many people actually watch this thing, as opposed to the last day of the Major League Baseball season.
And I should mention, EJ, that our fact checkers are following all of the, and have been following, of course, all the claims and counterclaims. And if you hear something that you think we should check out, you can tell us in our live chat. You can find that at npr.org or go on Twitter and use the hashtag factcheck. Matthew Continetti, let me ask you about how this debate could possibly change the equation for Romney, you know, if at all.
Well, like I said earlier, I think it might change the media equation slightly. I think this race has actually been fundamentally very stable for most of this general election. Mm-hmm. The president has a slight lead. It's a more exaggerated lead among registered voters. When you start polling people who say they are likely to vote, the lead narrows to only within the margin of error. That has been the case. The president enjoyed a post-convention, I think post-Clinton bounce, but that seems to be fading slowly. And so I think that this race, this moment in the debate, provides Romney an opportunity to continue to build and also to generate enthusiasm on two levels. One, you know, the details, the wonkiness might actually help Romney, because Romney's been hammered among the Republicans I talked to for not being specific.
Yeah.
Now, was he really that specific at the end of the day? Probably not, you know, he didn't match the platonic ideal of specificity. But I think the very fact that we're talking about the details of his plan might help him. The other thing is, you know, one big question that voters, or at least voters like me, ask is, who wants it more? Who do you get the sense really wants to be president, really wants to tackle these challenges? And just the energy levels watching this debate visually, Romney wanted it more. President Obama spent a lot of his time looking at his notes. He was not very energetic. I saw a tweet from Bill Maher, who cannot be called a Republican operative by any means, saying, you know what, maybe Obama does need that teleprompter. So I think that, in the end, is going to help Romney, if only slightly.
Mm. I saw a tweet that said, if the media call it for Romney, what will conservatives say about the liberal media?
Probably
that they're being honest.
Yeah.
Well, you know, this began with the very first thing that President Obama said in the debate, which was essentially that this is my wedding anniversary, and maybe tomorrow and maybe next year we'll have a little better occasion for having this event, which meant I'm not having a very good time here, whereas Romney all evening seemed to be having the time of his life.
And Obama, as Matt Connetti pointed out, was looking down at his notes often, and from the television vantage, it looked as if he was not engaged with the audience. Thanks to Ron Elving, NPR's senior Washington editor, also to E.J. Dionne of The Washington Post and Brookings, Matthew Continetti of The Washington Free Beacon, NPR's national political correspondent, Mara Liasson, and all of our correspondents in Denver and here in Washington for fact-checking this. You've been listening to live special coverage from NPR News. The conversation continues online at npr.org with analysis and fact-checking, and on the air on tomorrow's morning edition. Thanks for joining us.